Hi, I'm Jason Bowman, lead designer for Paizo Publishing, and you're listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 77. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, stick with 3.5, with the Pathfinder RPG seminar from Origins. There's still a handful of seminars and interviews from Origins that I haven't released yet. If you want to vote on what comes next, head over to the forums at thetomeshow.com. There are many other interesting conversations going on over there, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on using hexes in 4th edition, using minis, and hearing about your gaming experiences. While you're there, you can answer the 5 simple questions to be entered to win the Tome's Summer 2008 contest from Q Workshop, Swords Edge Publishing, Pulp Gamer, Green Ronin, Paizo Publishing, Goodman Games, High Moon Media, Sinister Adventures, and Myth Merchant Press. I've got an episode in the works that will give you a complete rundown of all the prizes, so make sure you get over there and enter the contest before the end of August. Also, since you're headed to the site anyway, why not swing by the Tome's Amazon store? I haven't mentioned it in a long time at the start of the show, but hey, why not get the internet discount prices while still supporting the added value you get from this show? It's the best of both worlds, and helps the show pay the bills. Okay, enough shilling for our things on thetomeshow.com. Now it's time to hear from the guys at Paizo Publishing about the Pathfinder RPG. Jason Bowman has worked hard to tweak and update the 3.5 D&D rules, and they're calling it the Pathfinder RPG. It is in a year-long of open testing where all of you can get in on letting them know what's good and what isn't good about the game so they can fix it before the rules are finalized. Without any more from me, let's hear from the guys at Paizo.
All right, we'll get started. This is the sticking with 3.5 / Pathfinder RPG seminar, so I hope everyone's here for that purpose. I'll introduce everybody. I'm Eric Mona. I'm the publisher at Paizo Publishing. To my right is Jason Bowman, who is the lead designer for Paizo and is taking the lead on the Pathfinder RPG project, which is to say doing almost everything. And Josh Frost is our director of marketing. And he's kind of been controlling our presence here at Origins and some other aspects of what we're doing vis-a-vis 3.5. How many people, just before I get started and get too specific, how many people in here are familiar with Pathfinder as a brand and as a product? Okay. All right, cool. So basically, the very short version is Paizo Publishing got its start about 6 years ago as the publishers of Dragon and Dungeon magazine. In fact, when we first started, we were the periodicals department of Wizards of the Coast, and we were spun off when Hasbro acquired Wizards of the Coast into our own entity. And I've been with the company since that, the day that happened. I edited Dragon and Dungeon magazines and then ultimately became the publisher of the company and run our publishing operation. So when the licenses for Dragon and Dungeon ended last year, we kind of put our heads together and tried to chart out what we wanted to do for the future of the company. And what we ended up deciding was the most popular thing that we had done with the magazines while we were in charge of them was the concept of the Adventure Path, which was a series of linked adventures in Dungeon Magazine. And we wanted to spin that off. We knew we wanted to get out of the magazine business because it's just a bad business to be in, pretty much, although it was great fun. And we knew we wanted to continue the Adventure Path idea. And we decided to do so in a way that addressed some people's complaints about magazines in the first place. So instead, we put out Pathfinder as a monthly 96-page full-color book with no advertisements, with a nice high-quality paper stock that you could really stand, you know, being run through a whole campaign. I ran the majority of the Age of Worms campaign in the office out of the magazines of Dungeon, and you know, the ink was picking up on my fingers and the paper, the pages were crinkling and stuff, and it was pretty sad, you know, what happened to the magazines after a lot of actual use. So we designed Pathfinder to be durable, and in it, so basically what Pathfinder The first 50 or so pages is an adventure, one of six parts. We do two whole adventure paths every year. And the rest of it is support articles, information about different locales, you know, relevant to the adventure, some summaries of monsters that are new to the module, and also some brand new monsters that are just thematically tied to the adventure. Pathfinder has been enormously successful for us. We have more subscribers now than we ever have before, and everybody seems to really be enjoying it. So we branched off into other products, support products, the Pathfinder Chronicles line, which is campaign setting material, so information about different countries and cities and things in our world. We just recently released Pathfinder Gazetteer, which Jason and I co-wrote. With some input from everybody at Paizo, and that is an overview of the whole world, 64-page overview of the whole world. And at Gen Con in next month, we'll be releasing a 256-page full-size hardcover campaign setting for our world. When we found out that Wizards of the Coast was going to be doing 4th edition D&D, we took a look at what we knew about the forthcoming system, and we paid real close attention to what the audience was telling us on our message boards, which we really interact with pretty much on a daily basis as a company. And there were ill omens in the wind. And we basically, there were a lot of people who were taking kind of a, hey, well, you know, we'll check it out when it comes out. There were a lot of people who were sort of screaming bloody murder. A lot of the early marketing that Wizards did for their game sort of denigrated third edition, and I think that that upset some folks, and also made it clear that a lot of the traditions of the game that had been really important to a lot of players for a long period of time were just not something that they were really interested in maintaining in an effort to kind of modernize the game and speed up play and what have you. So really the main thing that we decided to do at that point was A, listen to the audience, which was telling us in large part we're not really all that excited about what we're hearing about the new game, and then kind of listen to ourselves as people who'd been both fans of the games generally since we were little kids and professionals working with this version of the game for most of the last decade. And we basically just decided, hey, you know, the open game license allows us to publish 98% compatible with the official rules game that's very popular among the audience that we're selling to, and that allows us to tell the kind of stories that we've been telling in Pathfinder and doesn't force us to go back and, you know, reinvent everything that we had been putting so much effort and work into over the course of the last year. Basically, we just decided, hey, you know what? We don't really have to go along with 4.0. We were a little nervous about the terms of the license under which we might be able to publish under 4th edition 2. And although it's still early days yet, it appears as though some of those concerns were well-founded. So the open game license allows us to publish the way that, you know, the stuff that we want to publish perpetually with no approvals or no ability, Wizards or any other company that isn't us, to sort of dictate how we do our business and what products we have to destroy and all that kind of unpleasantness. And it allows us to tell the types of stories that we wanted. And a seeming majority of our readers were telling us that that's what they wanted us to do. So that's what we're doing. We started by taking the core rule set available in the open game license, what's called the system reference document, the SRD, and took a look at it. And we kind of talked to some of our readers, talked amongst ourselves, and sort of decided on what some of the generally accepted bugaboos about the system, things people didn't really like, things people thought could be improved. We figured, you know, in order to continue publishing Pathfinder as an OGL game, come about this time now, and we've been thinking about this for about a year and a half, but come this time, the 3.5 core rulebooks were going to go out of print. And so we needed to put out something that would allow new players to pick up our version of the game and that would allow us to continue to sell Pathfinder. So we said, let's republish the core rules, essentially. And when we were going through the expense of doing that, which is in the tens of thousands of dollars, we said, hey, but you know, maybe that we should make a few tweaks because there are some generally agreed upon flaws in the system. And that's where Jason kind of came in. The way we did it was we started with a few of the classes and a few of the big core concepts of the game, and we started releasing alpha playtest documents because we, you know, we don't really consider ourselves in some kind of ivory tower where we know all of the answers. So we wanted to throw some stuff against the wall, see what stuck, and we started putting out the alpha releases. And we've now done three alpha releases, and the message boards have really exploded at paizo.com. If you haven't already gotten the alpha releases, you can do so at paizo.com. It's 100% free. We're not charging anything for the document. The document's now what we call the Alpha 3 release, which is up to how many pages?
168
pages. And that's all free. It's got art. We laid it out like a real product. You know, we're treating this very seriously. And we've asked the community to give us their feedback and to run with these rules in their games and to play test, essentially, the new rules for us. And then the culmination, or I guess the culmination of this step, will be at Gen Con this year and August 13th or thereabout, online again. We'll be releasing the beta playtest edition of the Pathfinder RPG. And the beta will be 408 pages. Again, we'll be giving it away completely free on our website. It is in and of itself a complete game. There are a few things that aren't in there, and I'll let Jason talk about that. But that beta then is the ground zero sort of for our playtest efforts going through probably about, I would say, maybe May of 2009, at which point we're going to have to make the changes that we've gotten from the community and from ourselves, because we'll be doing some rigorous playtesting in-house as well, and then we'll send it to the printer. And then that will be the Pathfinder RPG that will come out in August of 2009, so about a year from now. And at that point, Pathfinder, all of our other products will convert fully to the Pathfinder role-playing game system. Now, we're also going to, we're trying to make it reverse compatible. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to fix a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily show up in stat blocks and things in the adventures. So there's going to be a lot of people who don't want to convert to a new system. And we're really not trying to give people a new system. We're just trying to kind of fix up some of the little problems with 3.5 in as interesting a way as we can. And so ideally, at the end of this process, if you're going to get Pathfinder, the Pathfinder that comes out in August of 2009, which will be a brand new start of a new adventure path with a new rule system, if you're not really all that interested in the Pathfinder RPG, you'll be able to play through it with 3.5. Some of the abilities of, like, the Barbarian or something might run a little bit differently, but we'll put all that in the stat block. So if you're not, you know, looking to get a new system, you'll still be able to follow along the Pathfinder stuff as well. And from what I hear about 4th edition, it's quite easy to adapt, you know, modules and things like that and monsters. And so ideally we'll end up with a product that gives the 3.5 audience and Paizo's existing audience the kinds of adventure paths and adventures that they've come to expect from us and that they like, while also giving people who play, 4.0 cool stories and things that they can relatively easily convert, you know, to their own campaigns. So I've rambled kind of a lot. I want to turn it over to Jason for a minute, because that's basically the spiel I gave Jason several months ago and said, okay, now go. And then Jason sort of has been furiously working. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the creative process.
Sure. Well, as Eric said, this whole thing started with us just kind of identifying some of the warts, right? 3.5 is a pretty good game. It's got a lot of fun parts to it, but there are a couple parts that are a little bumpy, a little rough. The things that everyone always complains about. If I ask anybody, what's the most complicated, misunderstood rule in 3.5? I got grapple 95% of the time. That went right at the top of the list. Grapple, fix, grapple. Things like polymorph, no spell has been errated more times than polymorph. That spell just keeps getting fixed. So, it's like, well, let's just find one solution that works. And that was kind of the first impetus, like, let's see what things we can fix. And from there, we kind of moved into the realm of, well, besides just like what straight rule can we fix, what kind of grander problems can we fix without drastically altering the game? Things like the fact that after 5 levels, everybody's running for a prestige class, right? Because the base classes just kind of are boring after a period of time. They really don't give you much after a certain period. And most of the prestige classes that have come out in the latter years of 3.5 were just so much better. It was like, I can get all of the things of my base class and more abilities just by making certain skill selections. Okay, I'll do that. So we changed a lot of the base classes to kind of add some features to them that gave them kind of a bit more power, a bit more versatility in some regards, to make them a more interesting choice over 20 levels. That way, prestige classes could really become something that more focuses your character as opposed to just becoming the norm, because without it, you're not as powerful. We started making a lot of those sorts of changes, and a lot of those culminated in Alpha Release 1. Alpha Release 1 included, you know, the four primary classes, I would say, you know, Rogue, Wizard, Cleric, Fighter. Just kind of your basic building blocks. And that was a really exciting time when that came out. That was huge. You know, we had thousands and thousands of downloads within days, and our message boards really took off. That's really been the linchpin of this whole process. The feedback from the fans has been absolutely critical, you know, because a lot of what we were doing is like, let's see how far we can push the boundaries. There's going to be a certain point where if we push it farther than that, people will be like, this is too much to convert. No, no, stop. Skills, you've gone too far. You know, the first alpha skills were, boy, they were easy to use, but man, there were a lot of people who were like, no, that's too far, too far. I can't have my guy who's a fisherman. And I said, you know what, you're probably right. We went too far. So over the next release, you know, by the time we got to release two, we took a lot of that feedback, made some changes to release one, and added four more classes, added a bunch more rules, and the document doubled in size. And, you know, we made some of those fixes. And from that point onward, that's just been the way we've been operating, is that we get a lot of feedback from the fans. You know, there's been well over 20,000 posts on our message boards about the various releases. Well over. It may be actually over 30. My count's about a month old.
Yeah, the alpha's been downloaded by more than 22,000 unique, you know.
Yeah, 22,000 unique individuals have downloaded one version or the other. From that, you know, we'd comb through all this feedback, look for more good ideas. And sometimes, you know, I'd get to a point and it's like, I don't know what to do with this, guys. And I just post up the message boards. What do you guys think? You know, what directions can we go? And that's been a really critical part of the process. From Alpha 2, we went to Alpha 3. Alpha 3 contained all of the base classes. And a large chunk of the rules that we wanted to see changed at this stage. That kind of rounded us out and allowed us to kind of move forward toward the beta. From that, the document balloons out to the 408-page beta, which is due out at Gen Con this year. Boy, that was a long week. Yeah, but the beta is now off to the printer.
The week we shipped it, not the week he worked on it. Right?
No, yeah, it only took me a week. Not even close. But yeah, I mean, you know, we've been working on it for months, and getting that thing off to the printer was really big, and we're really excited to get it out to all of you. The beta playtest process is going to work just a little differently. It's still going to be message board driven. But we're going to be a bit more focused. The alphas were really kind of scattershot. We got a lot of feedback on a lot of different topics, and for a lot of people, the biggest complaint was, I got lost. I just don't know what's going on. There's like 100 threads in every folder, and they're all churning daily, which is a lot for individuals to keep stock on. It's also a lot for me to keep stock on. So for the beta process, once that book's released, we're going to have more discrete cycles where it's like, okay, guys, for the next 2 weeks, I want feedback on barbarians. What do you guys got on barbarians? Who's playing barbarians? What do you guys think of the current systems? What kind of tweaks can we make to make barbarian better? And we're just going to move from piece to piece over the months. And I'm going to have a very active presence in those folders, talking about the current rules, where we're going. And all of that's going to be based off the beta. Now, the beta, as I mentioned, is a complete game. But there are some pieces of it that are not quite there. Prestige classes are not in the beta. We just weren't ready for prestige classes yet. There are going to be kind of supplemental beta releases that include things like prestige classes. They won't be happening right away, but sometime probably this fall, we'll start putting out prestige class rules.
As free PDFs.
As free PDFs, yeah. And those are going to allow us to kind of test out some concepts with prestige classes, how we want to work with them. I don't think they're going to change radically, because I think there's so many prestige classes out there existing that if I change the way prestige classes work radically, I'm going to get the same kind of skill discussion that I got earlier, which is you've gone too far. But that said, we're going to be looking for ways to kind of streamline and make them easier to use. In most cases, that's not a huge problem. But there's some other bits that didn't make it in there. Intelligent magic items, for example. You know, I was running out of space, and the poor talking sword had to go. That said, the current rules for those are rather complicated and cumbersome. If you've ever had to build an intelligent magic item, it's like, well, these charts are ridiculous. There's got to be an easier way. And that's how we have been working this whole process. I mean, that's how Grapple, Trip, Bull Rush, and all those became the combat maneuver bonus, which just became an easier solution to a wide range of complex problems. So we're going to be looking for more solutions like that and do some supplemental releases as we march through the beta. So that's going to be the playtesting cycle from August to approximately April or late April or early May, somewhere in there. And we're really looking forward to getting everybody on board for that. So I think that kind of covers.
Yeah. You are actually running playtest campaigns right now.
Oh, I mean, sneaking the rules in my playtest.
All right.
Does playing in one count?
Yeah, playing in one certainly counts.
Yeah.
August and eight.
All right.
One of the reasons why we're being so solicitous of everyone's feedback and why we feel it's really important to get the community involved is that, you know, for many of us, we hope, and certainly for me personally, I mean, this is going to be the version of the game that we're playing, you know, for the next several years, ideally. And so we don't just want it to be our game. We want it to be everybody's game. And it's really important. You know, we might think we have the most clever idea about how to solve a particular problem, but that, you know, again, for a lot of people, like, backwards compatibility is the most important thing. There's a lot of people whose big issue is, hey, I've sunk several thousand dollars into this big library of prestige class books or, you know, feat compilations or what have you. And, you know, the further we push things away from the established core, the more we risk that person's investment. And so, you know, we want to innovate and we want to fix things that generally are accepted as weaknesses of the game, but we don't want to push things so far that we sort of invalidate the whole point of doing this in the first place, which is that, you know, we want to stick with the game as it is essentially right now. So that, I think, is the biggest sort of give and take and the biggest risk we run, I think, during this whole thing, frankly, is sort of getting too tripped up with a clean solution and then doing something that kind of makes everyone go, wait, well, you know, if I just wanted a new game, I would have gone with 4th edition or I would have gone with a totally different GURPS or something like that. We want that the people, you know, who've been playing the game for years and years and years to still be able to rely on their, you know, their experience and be able, you know, I mean, I would guess most of you who are running the game don't, you know, have to look up the rules every time you play anymore. I mean, you've kind of got it down.
And
we. Well, yeah, and then we
fixed
that. Or I hope we fix that. And so, so that's a great example. Is those there are a lot of areas that do force you to pull the books back out, and it's all, a lot of times it's because it was, you know, something like prestige classes, which were kind of added at the last minute, or something like the grapple, which just has little subsystems that are confusing, and turning is the same thing. So that's really the deal with the Pathfinder RPG and what we're planning on doing with it and the involvement of the community as well. So, Josh, you have anything to add?
No, let's just open up for questions.
All right, so I figured folks have some questions, so I'll show off. Huh? I actually have a printer proof of the beta here in this bag, and I'll show it off at the end if people want to see it.
Right.
but just to give you an idea of what we're doing, a lot of people... So basically, once we started releasing the free PDFs, what we started hearing is a lot of people were taking them to Kinko's or, you know, whatever, and trying to get them printed, or God forbid, printing them on their Staples or whatever, printing them on their own, you know, on their own inkjets.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it's very expensive, and especially if you want to go, you know, full bore with the color printing and everything like that. So, you know, we were just kind of like, we'll do free PDFs, and that'll be cool. It'll be totally free, and hooray for everyone. And then people were like, well, no, you should print something up for the beta so that we can have it at the table and we can run the game and stuff. And so we're like, well, okay. So at Gen Con and on Paizo.com and at stores as well, you're going to be able to buy the beta playtest edition of the game, which is going to be a soft cover version. version of the game, which is $25. I printed the Alpha 2 release at Kinko's, and it cost me $50. So it's going to be a nice soft cover book. And this, I'll show this around. I'll actually pass this around if you'd like. This is what's called a white book, and we got this from our printer who's here at the show. And this is what it's going to look like. It's a nice soft color book, cover book. I want to show one thing that I think is really cool. Lays flat on the table. Yeah, so this is what you'll get for $25, and I think you'll be surprised by how heavy it is. There will be words. There will be pictures. There will be page numbers. There will be printed cover, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that gives you an idea just of the kind of girth of it and the dimensions of it. And so that's 408-page book right there. My prediction right now is that the final version of the RPG, which will essentially take the GM information and the player information from the first two core books and smoosh them together, I think it's probably going to run up something like probably about 600 pages. That would be my guess.
I'm going to try 550, but yeah. Who knows at this point.
So we'll see.
Keeps getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's going to be everything in one book.
Yeah. Not all the monsters.
Except monsters.
That'll be separate. But in terms of the player and GM information, yeah, we're just going to put it all in one book. What's that?
Cheaper for us and cheaper for you.
Yeah. I think across the board, it'll be better for everybody.
Anyway, and all the players I know have both copies.
Have what?
DMGs and PHB.
Right.
I've been playing since basic set.
Yeah.
Xbox, and everybody I know has a copy of the DMG, copy of the PHB, because the way that they were done until now. Oh, I have this magic sword. What is it again?
Right. So we're just going to put it all in one book. Yeah. You know, I mean, it just seems more convenient. The only people for whom it isn't necessarily more convenient is, like, in an organized play campaign, you know, and you come to the convention, it's going to be a little heavier, but I figure it's a little bit better than carrying a couple of books. There's going to be fewer hardcovers, which should make up for the
I wouldn't worry about that. Today, in the RPGA, you have to carry 4, 5, 6 books.
Yeah, fair enough.
Parts coming to the table.
Fair enough. We are... I'll get you just a second. I should mention... At Gen Con this year, we're launching our own organized play program, which is called the Pathfinder Society, and it's going to use the 3.5 rules until August of 2009, at which point it'll shift over fully to the new Pathfinder RPG rules. One other thing that I should mention, because there's been a lot of questions about it, especially online among some of the other publishers, is a lot of people who are more comfortable with the open game license than they are with the new game system license from Wizards of the Coast have been asking us, well, how can we, you know, publish material that's compatible with your version of the game? And we are working right now on a compatibility license. It's basically just a free license that will give you a logo that says, you know, compatible with Pathfinder or Pathfinder RPG enabled is kind of what I'm currently thinking of. And there'll be a couple of paragraphs of legal text that you'll have to put in your product that basically says, you know, Paizo didn't read this, so don't get mad at us if there's nasty stuff in it or whatever. Basically, you know, your game will have to actually be compatible with the Pathfinder RPG. But it's going to be a free license, and it's not, like, super restrictive, and we're not going to tell you to pulp all your product and all that kind of fun stuff that all the publishers for the last couple of weeks have been a little nervous about online. So yeah, you had a question in the back.
Actually, I was going to ask, once the rules are all fully codified and everything is all done, you're printing the final Pathfinder rulebook.
Right.
You'll also be releasing it as a PDF.
Yeah. Well, we release everything we do as a PDF. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It will absolutely be. Now, that one won't be free. kind of the free period ends with the beta, with the various beta supplements that he was talking about. But the final, there'll be a fee associated with that, of course. But
there's a lot of laptops at the game table.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of us use that as well, and it's searchable, and it's just, you know, for a lot of people, a lot more convenient.
Just a question for my friend, which is blind.
Okay.
Who is playing LG at the moment, and he loves it. Will it be enabled for screen readers?
Enabled for screen readers. I'm not even really sure what that means.
Basically, you have to be OCR.
Uh-huh.
It has to be not locked so the screen reader can read it.
Oh.
Some early LG mod at that problem.
Okay. I'll try to look into that and see what we can do.
Because it could be a legal issue.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of visually impaired gamers, and I would love for them to be able to participate, you know, as well. So.
Have you tried any of the current Paizo PDFs?
Yeah, I don't know if he looked at it. I'll have to ask him, but
That'd be good. I mean, if it doesn't,
I spoke to him last week, and then it kind of popped up.
If it, you know, it, I would check the alphas that are online right now, and if they work, then hey, we're doing it right. And if it doesn't work, then post a message or somewhere on paizo.com and we'll kind of explain what's going on, and we'll do what we can, because I'd love for everybody to be able to use it. Yeah.
Is there any, not really set schedule, but planned schedule for what's going to come after?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we're discussing internally. I mean, the first thing that we're going to need to do, obviously, is some kind of monster book, you know, and we got a lot of options there. One of the great things about the Open Game License is that there have been, you know, almost a decade of really cool products in addition to what's in the SRD already. You've got the Tome of Horrors from Necromancer, which opened virtually every first edition monster perpetually, which is nice. And also a lot of other publishers have really cool monster content. So kind of the most fun part of this, I think, once we're done with the rules and stuff, is we're all going to sit down and be like, let's make a monster book and try to decide like what we put in there. And obviously there are a lot of core monsters that you really shouldn't not that you really should include in a monster manual. I came across that thought recently. So we'll try and make sure that all those sort of core monsters, we don't stretch those out over three or four books, that we'll put them all in one. But there are a lot of other interesting, cool, you know, monsters. Everything we do, sure, the flumps are open from the Tome of Horrors. Everything that we do with the rules is open, 100%. Well, 99.99%, because there's one chart in the beta that is like we put a little sample pantheon so that you can use our gods and stuff like that if you want. That part's not open, but everything else in the rules totally opens. The spirit of the Open Game License to be open with the content. We want to let other people use it, develop it, whatever. All of the rules in Pathfinder, all the monsters in Pathfinder, you know, all that stuff is open. We hope other publishers take that, use it. We definitely will go. You know, I used to edit Polyhedron, which was the D20 magazine, so I've got basically everything from the first several years of the OGL, and you know, we're all sort of voracious consumers of this material ourselves. So, you know, we really hope to be able to act as kind of a hub for open material and you know, incorporate as much as we can, and then offer all that stuff back up for other publishers who might want to incorporate that stuff into their own material. And the Ghostbusters shirt, yes, sir.
Nice.
I call on you.
I'm new to DMing. The Curse of the Crimson Throne is the first story campaign I ever run, and I really like the tools you guys do. I love the Gizmos here. I recently got the item deck, which I have fun. But my favorite part is the Harrow deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it's a very unique and very interesting way to communicate to players and reveal stuff without revealing too much. How's that going to factor in?
I don't think it's going to change over much. We've got, you know, the Harrow is really based on, like, the nine alignments and things like that. And so we're keeping the standard alignment that's always been with the game. I think we'll take a close look at that section and maybe sort of be a little more clear about some of the definitions and kind of take another shot at some of those. But, you know, there's going to be lawful evil. There's going to be neutral evil. There's going to be neutral good. There's going to be, you know, all that, like, lawful good's not just going to be, like, super good. It's going to actually be, like, lawful good.
We'll be making sure it's all compatible. I mean, we're looking at all of our products that way. Like, the critical hit decks and the critical fumble decks will not be invalidated by the new rules.
Right, and that's one of the reasons, you know, it's like we look back on all this cool stuff we've done, and we're like, do we really want to kind of just throw all that away? And the answer is no, we don't. And so we're going to do our best to make sure that stuff is still usable. I should point out, incidentally, that at Gen Con we're also releasing, it's a 3.5 book, we're also releasing the Pathfinder Chronicles campaign setting. And in that book, there's a prestige class called a Harrower who actually uses the Harrow deck. And it's super cool. So
I do have one request. If you maybe make a quick lookup chart for the different alignments and interpretations of the cards, because I get that little booklet.
Well, magnifying glass. Yeah, that'd be a cool, like, PDF or something. I mean, isn't in Pathfinder 7, do they have that stuff?
It's, I'm thinking more of something that's easier to look at, more of a...
Like a just one-page printout thing or something? Yeah, let me toss that idea around back home. I think that's an interesting one. Yes, sir.
Has there been any thoughts? I know it's still early in the process, but for 3.0, one of my favorite books was Savage Species.
Mm-hmm.
Monster classes. Now, they never released a book where we could go crazy with Titans and Dragons
right.
and Beholders. Oh my. That was one of the first possibility of kicking around the book.
Well, it's not open, but I just hired Sean K. Reynolds, who wrote that book, or co-wrote that book. So he'll be a developer on basically everything we do, and he's a real rules-minded guy. And yeah, I mean, like I said, after the monster, the sort of monster book we need to do, you know, we'll toss around a lot of ideas, and certainly monsters as playable characters is something that I know there's a lot of folks who like. And also, you know, as much as... If I can just speak about my own opinion here for a second, as much as I like the idea of Savage Species, in some ways I felt like the implementation sort of wasn't all that great in many ways. And so so whereas the idea is really cool, I don't really want to necessarily go the same approach that they use. And frankly, since it's not open, I can't. So we'll probably come up with a slightly different way of going about that. But I mean, who wouldn't want to play like a Minotaur and all that kind of stuff? And I've, you know, and this is a conversation I've actually never had with Jason before, but I'm not like the world's biggest fan of like the level adjustment system and all that, especially with races like, you know, Drow and things that like really aren't making a Titan or whatever, but are just like, okay, so this guy's a slightly different, you know, maybe a little bit more powerful than a player character race, but well, meh. So, Jason,
one of the things I've been doing kind of quietly, because I've already anticipated this discussion, is some of the changes I've been making to the races was so that a lot of those level adjustment plus one races
right.
are no longer level adjustment plus one. They're kind of balanced on par with the core races. I wanted to open up a lot of those, because that's where a lot of the monsters live. A lot of them just live at plus one. And those rules tend to really be a penalty at low levels. And there's a lot of ways that we can deal with that, and there's some options that I'm toying around with, and hopefully there's something I can get to discussing with the playtesters here soon. But I think one of the big things is that some of those level adjustment kind of penalties should really probably go away as you get to higher levels, because a lot of those bonuses really aren't all that good at high levels, but they're great at low levels. So there needs to be more of a scaling mechanic for it, as opposed to just a flat, well, you're one level higher, and that's really terrible at 18th level, right. but it's really great at first level. So there's some things we got to play around with that, and we'll kind of see how that goes. But I'm on it.
That's why he's the lead designer. Yes.
Quietly. I mean, come on, you fix the classes too, so they scaled up to a lot of the extra classes they put out later, like the
well,
scout and those two. But the actual question is, what are you guys doing about higher level play? Because even the adventure pass, they peter out at about 16th level.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Well, there's a lot of things we're doing on high-level play, and one of the things that hasn't really caught on is in Alpha Release 3, we put out a chart about designing monsters. And those charts are based off a lot of averages and pulled numbers from like, okay, here's all the monsters, what's their averages to hit right now? The numbers on that chart, actually, and it hasn't been noticed because no one's done the math, and that's because the math's really irritating to do. But those average numbers are closer to different baselines than what you're seeing right now in a lot of the books. And that's in effect because we can either kind of try and change high-level play from a number of different angles, and we're going to, because the easiest way to kind of massage out high-level play is to kind of assault it from a couple different angles. I can't just change the way characters work entirely, and we can't just change the way monsters work entirely. But if we kind of make some subtle adjustments to both of them, we can kind of get to a point where spellcasters can still cast spells at monsters at high levels because they won't automatically make their saves, which is one of the big problems right now, is that spellcasters turn into kind of a, I have to cast only spells that don't allow saves because the monsters always make them at high levels. And the flip side of that is that fighters can't really do anything at high levels, you know, because their damage output is too low. There's a lot of kind of little ins that if we kind of massage around all of them, it gets a lot better.
Like save or die, I think is
yeah,
one of them.
Yeah, save or dies are one of those that at high levels can turn the awesome climactic fight at the end of your campaign into a funny story about how Caius rolled a one. But in the end, that's not really a great ending to, you know, a two-year campaign, right? So there's a lot of little things like that we can do. There's going to be a lot of discussion about high-level play over the next year. That's going to be one of my major focuses. It's not something we were able to do an awful lot with in some of the alphas, but in the beta, you'll start to see some of it. Some of those monster guidelines start addressing some of it about monster saves and armor classes, bringing those down to a point where you don't have to be super kitted out to still be an effective character, allowing you to still kind of participate and not have to deal with super complexities and really kind of strange subsystems to be an effective high-level character, which is one of the big problems right now. So I hope that answers it.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, your low-level characters PC just destroyed 3.5 monsters.
Well, we gotta maybe make some adjustments to those low-level monsters too. But
that's one of the challenges with trying to make a reverse compatible game with a game that is only the core system, which is fully open, is, you know, like take the Scout as a perfect example. I had a Scout in my game, and he seemed better than the Thief or the Rogue, I should say, or the Ranger in almost every single metric that you could possibly view. And so, you know, on the one hand, we want to, you know, a lot of people want to use Scouts in their game, and that's cool. We can't fix the Scout because the Scout's not open. So, you know, we're going to try and bring some of the other races or the other classes sort of up to that level. You know, and then the big concern is, well, isn't it just a big sort of power bump across the board, and what are the implications of that throughout the rest of the system? And that's what I tell Jason to work on. I don't have all the answers.
A lot of what I've been doing is, if you really kind of dig deep into the math, like, yes, it's a power bump at first level. That's probably true on most cases. But, like, wizards are trading out some things for others. I often tried to do some trades. There were some classes that were like, this class just needs more, right? I mean, there's just nothing around it. There are some classes that were just like, this needs more. This is not good enough. But for some of the more powerful classes, like Druid didn't really change all that much. In the grand scheme of things, Druid not really drastically change. And that's because Druids can be an incredibly effective character. Now, I mean, you know, of course, your experience, your mileage may vary, right? It's like, well, my druid fell over and died. But a lot of people's druids are like, I turn into a bear and eat everything. And then I turn back into a human, and how does that work? Because I swallowed whole. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, we're going to be looking to address a lot of those issues. Yep.
Yeah, green shirt.
All right. And along those lines, are you guys looking to put out a couple of beta modules? Or, you know,
people have really suggested that we do that, and I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, we've certainly got some modules sitting around. We're certainly not going to print any beta modules or anything like that, but we might, you know, we might go through and put together like a playtest adventure.
I might have something I'm toying with.
Jason,
I'm not going to make any promises.
Yeah, the answer is, I think that would be a really helpful thing to do for the playtest, and he does too. And you know, I mean, that's something we're I would not be at all surprised to see. Nothing I can say for sure right now, but
it would at least give you a baseline of what the other side's gonna look like when you're trying to test the characters again.
Right, right. One thing a lot of people are doing too is one of the things that's pretty cool about this whole process for me is a lot of folks are coming to Paizo actually for the first time because of what we're doing with 3.5, and so a lot of folks are, you know, running through Rise of the New Lords or Curse of the Crimson Throne and stuff with the Pathfinder RPG rules. And because we expect some folks will still want to use older 3.5 adventures and things like that, it's actually very instructive for us to find out how it interacts with existing 3.5 material as well. So yes, it would be very helpful to have Pathfinder RPG adventures, and we'll look into putting something together for that. But we're also really interested to know, you know, I mean, like he said, for instance, they're mulching through some low-level monsters. That's useful information for us. I mean, I don't think that particular thing comes as much as a surprise to Jason, but, you know, there are implications that we maybe haven't fully sussed out, and that's why it's so helpful to have thousands of people jamming through these rules. Is there anybody who hasn't asked a question yet? Yeah.
I was just going to ask Jason, why do you hate concentration? The concentration of music.
I'm a little curious about that too.
Yeah, well, yeah, concentration. Touch me in my swimsuit area. No. We're going to move on. No, so...
this is being recorded.
I know. That's going to be all over the tubes. All right, so... So what it boils down to is that...
All right.
A little loopy. All right. What it boils down to is that under the old system, wizards really had three skills they had to take, and they only got two skill points. They needed knowledge arcana, they needed spellcraft, and they needed concentration. So I was kind of trying to find a way to divvy those up into perhaps two skills. I mean, initially I had a pipe dream of one, but I felt like too far. too far. So I was like, okay, I'm going to divide this up into two skills. And I was like, okay, I want knowledge arcane, because it's a knowledge skill, and it should work like all the other knowledge skills, in that it is book-learned knowledge. And then I want a skill that kind of represents your practical ability to cast spells. How good are you at the act of casting a spell? And I was like, well, I can either go with concentration or spellcraft. And I picked spellcraft. The reason for that is that concentration, although I know it has other uses, in 8 years I have seen it used for a use that is not making a concentration check to cast a spell a grand total of twice. It's like, well, I'm walking along a ledge and there's a big wind and I'm holding a candle, make a concentration check to avoid, you know, dropping the water. I mean, you know, there were a lot of things that you could use it for, but it never got used for those things. It was just the prerequisite caster ability that every caster had to sink ranks into if they wanted to use their class's ability. Now, admittedly, just changing it to spellcraft is just the same horse but a different color. And it is like that in the beta, but I'm seriously very, very strongly right now thinking about just changing into a will save and being done with it. And moving it out of the realm of skills entirely, because it's just this weird prerequisite thing that all spellcasters have to take. Now, that hasn't been done yet, and I want to talk to a lot of people about it, like about 10,000 people about it, before we go in any strange directions like that. But right now, I'm kind of really leaning that way. So, for those of you playing Psionics campaigns out there going, where is my concentration skill? Because I really need it for Psionics. We're looking into seeing how we can kind of patch that as well. And the answer might be for Psionics, there is a concentration skill. The answer might also be that some of that stuff gets wrapped into Psycraft. The answer might also be that some of it might get wrapped into some sort of will save. So we're looking at some various options here, and we're going to try and find something that works for everybody involved.
And happily, the Psionics roles are open, so yeah. We have an opportunity to go in there and fix some things up as well. In fact, you know, a handful, actually two or three different publishers who focus on Psionics as the main thing that they do have come out of the woodwork and sort of said, hey, we want to take a crack at, you know, helping you guys with the Psionics rules, and that's something we're strongly considering. I mean, the fact of the matter is Psionics is not really the main concentration of anyone, you know, on the design staff, so we could really use some outside help. And if any of you guys really value Psionics as a part of your play experience, you know, we definitely want to hear about that on the message boards and stuff as well, because it may be, you know, I mean, the we understand the core rules very, very well. I mean, I think, you know, we edited professionally with the core rules for the whole time that they've been since they were created, and since, in my case, since before they were created. So, you know, we're pretty good with that. As far as Psionics and some of the other subsystems and things that came out in some of the later books and things, it sort of just depends on if we've used them in our own campaigns or if we really were drawn to them initially. There are some third-party products that probably use the rules in radical ways that we're not fully aware of. And so if any of the changes that we do sort of mess up something that you guys value more highly than us, we definitely would love to hear about it, you know, on the message boards. Because we got pretty good knowledge, but we don't have perfect knowledge.
Yeah, concentration's one of those I keep hearing about. I'm looking into it.
Some of those are using playing
about. Yeah.
Yeah, good, good.
Target of
keep it up. any other questions? Yeah.
With the open game license, does that preclude you from actually being able to tell how to create characters?
No. The D20 license does.
Because I was curious, with the skills section, which was put back in, I noticed that it doesn't mention anything about first level, the times 4.
That's because the times 4 is gone.
It is gone?
Yeah. The reason why we got rid of that, and what happened is, when we went from the Alpha 1 skill system, which was pick a skill, you have auto maximum ranks, there wasn't a lot of flexibility in that. So I wanted to go back to a rank system. But the problem with the rank system is it is terribly complicated for a GM to work with. It's like, oh, I want to make a 12th level fighter, rogue, shadow dancer. Oh, my God. I just got the skills.
Yeah, what happens when his intelligence changes in the middle?
Oh, great. Yeah, no, that's awfully fun. key, awful. No, I mean, it's just overly complicated and overly time-consuming. there were two factors that made it that way. The first one is the times four at the beginning, because it's like, okay, you have to know what his intelligence was at first level, and you have to know what his class was at first level. Now, when you're making up NPCs, oftentimes that's just DM code for put this class that gives you the best skills at first level because you get the most skill points. Well, that seems ridiculous. That's not really valuable. You can't reverse engineer it. It's like, we're going to move away from that. The other part of that was the cross-class skill mechanic where you could buy half ranks, and it just wasn't really valuable to the play experience. So the new system is a bit more streamlined. You get the same number of ranks you used to at every level, and you take that, and you also get the same number at first. So you just kill the times four. So if I've got a wizard with a 16 intelligence and he's 12th level, I know I can have five skills at plus, 15th level? Plus 15. 15 ranks, and that's it. I mean, I'm done. I don't have to worry about anything else. It's just that simple. You just figure out how many skills he has from a GM's perspective, and you assign them, and you just call them max ranks. So I kind of got the best of both worlds. The players can customize all they want and, take two ranks of this and five ranks of that and max ranks in these two skills. But if the GM wants to keep it simple, he can just find out how many ranks the guy gets at a level and assign them equal to the guy's total hit dice, and he's done. And that's it. So that's kind of why we went with that. So that's why you're not seeing the times four. An incredibly overcomplicated answer for a simple question. Next.
Yeah.
Are you finding your feedback is more from real playtesting or by your team they know?
That's a great question. There's a lot of armchair designers, and that's great. I've gotten a lot of great feedback. I really have. I've gotten a lot of great ideas, especially when it comes to something that's like, I don't know what to do with monks, guys. What am I doing with monks? Well, there's still some problems with monks. What am I doing? And I got like 200 posts in 2 days. And I was like, okay, great. I can find something now to do with monks. And I combed through it, and I found something to do with monks, and that's what we did with monks. The flip side of that, though, is, I get some threads that are like, here's my new alternate fighter, which is totally different and incredibly complicated. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go over here. It's not to say I didn't read them, right? I still read them because I was like, there were a couple people that posted alternate classes that I was like, that's a cool idea. I'm going to take that. But I'm not going to take the whole class, right? But by far, the most useful feedback for me was people's playtest reports. I mean, far and away, it was like, okay, we were using the rules, and we came upon this situation. Because there's a lot of theoretical kind of work you can do, but then there's the practical work of, wow, we were using this, and there were some issues with grapple, right? Or there were some issues with, like grapple changed again. And, people started playing around with the cover rules from Alpha 1 and 2, and I think they were still in 3, and it was like, wow, this is incredibly precise and horribly overcomplicated.
Which the rest of the staff
Stop
knew the day
it.
That Jason explained it to us.
Yeah, there may have been a scenario where I came in with a bunch of tactiles with like 84 lines on them, and to me it was like, oh, this is perfectly clear. And I started explaining
like,
it. And everybody's looking at me like pulling out their eyes and going, I can still see. And I was like, no, guys, trust me, it's awesome. You can have shades of cover from plus 1 to plus 4. It's going to be great.
No.
Yeah. Well, that isn't in the beta anymore.
The
dream is dead.
And it probably won't be the first. But or with the last, I should say. Yeah, one of the things that is not helpful, I would say, is the feedback that just kind of misses the point. People who are like, hey, how about if you throw in a couple of extra new races? Or how about you just get rid of the bard because that guy sucks or whatever? I mean, we're trying to replicate the core rules of the game as expressed in the 3.5 SRD. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. Hey, man, I'd love to do like a shadow caster class or whatever. And we may very well get around to that. But the place for that is not in this book, which after all is already looking like it's going to be about 600 pages long, right? So
yeah. Racial feats are the one that I'd love to be able to include, but I just don't think I'm going to have
it. Yeah, but we might at some point do a race book, that has a bunch of extra information about elves and dwarves
new
and
races.
Gnomes and half-orcs and all the other critical player character races.
Yeah.
So.
So those with plain orcs, can you include how the other races play?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, sure. We'll include a taste chart, you know.
So yeah. So, but overall, the feedback has been really helpful. I mean, we couldn't do this without the feedback. It would not be anywhere near as cool and as good a project as it's been based on the feedback. So yeah, in the back.
Are you going to maintain templates for the races? Well, I guess characters like half dragons, werewolves,
yes.
Yeah.
Next question.
They're really cool, and
I'm going to be looking for a way to make them a bit easier to apply, though. I think right now it's like, oh, I applied a template, and all my hit dice changed, and my skill points changed, and everything changed. Wow. I mean, it's not something you can do on the fly. And I'm not saying that, you know, every template you should be able to be like, well, I just turned this guy into a lich, and it was fun. Awesome. But there should be kind of an easier way to be like, okay, so you didn't really prep the guy as a lich, and now he's a lich, and here's how you deal with it. And some of that, you know, like the NPC generator was like, I didn't simplify the way you build NPCs, but I gave you tools to make it simple to make. And that's kind of some of the things that we're trying to do, which is like, I didn't change the rules at all, but if I give you the right skeleton that you can walk through, it just goes faster. Like, you know, the NPC wealth charts where it's like, spend this much on weapons, spend this much on armor, spend this much on this. And you can build your equipment 10 times faster than if you just have some big number and you're like, I bought this great sword for him, and then I bought armor, and then I ran out of money for anything else, and now I need to go and unbuy his weapon and armor and buy something not as good. And you know, so that's kind of what we're doing. Yeah.
Okay, we'll take a couple more questions, and then I'd be happy to show off the beta if you guys want to come up and take a look. Does anyone else have any more questions? Yeah.
You said a beta will go up to $25, but how much WordPress would you be at for the final in October?
I'm not really ready to say yet. I don't really know. I mean, I would love to keep it like under $50, but I don't know if I can.
You can't predict anything right now with gas prices. It's
I mean, there's just all the it's weird.
Everything is ridiculously expensive.
You know,
it's just getting more expensive. So
yeah, so
it would be unprofessional of us to put any kind of price on a product that we're releasing in a year and a half.
Right.
With a vague number of pages.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we're conscious of the fact that it needs to be affordable. Is all I can really say. I mean, we're going to do whatever we can to keep the price down.
There is a price on the website that is $49.99. That was to allow people to pre-order, I think we might have to do something about.
So we don't know
managing
yet.
Managing expectations.
We don't know yet, and so you know. But one of the things I have to do as a publisher is like people online are like, yeah, put in like 5 cloth, you know, bookmarks and emboss the cover, and man, it'd be so awesome if it was 3D, you know. And
blinking lights. That's what we always.
We're not going to do that. We're gonna do whatever we can to make it an affordable game. So,
pop-up, that is the best idea.
It's like one of the major complaints of like the 20 people I've pretty much sold on this game to my friends and everything is, does it, I mean, I don't know if it's just me and I.
Well, first of all, thank you.
Yeah
that's
going soft on the PCs. It feels, you get the extra healing, you get a little more power, you want the more hit points, you lose saber dies, and it just, it kind of feels like, because that was a big thing that it kind of sounded in 4.0, it's kind of easier, your characters didn't die so fast, so you don't have that. And I kind of felt that now it's easy. It's as my buddies put it.
Have you read any of our modules?
I love modules. I don't need your module. I mean, just regular D&D, and they're like, and my buddies like, if there's no threat of death and no fear, then it's
no.
As someone who's running a Pathfinder RPG playtest campaign running through Curse of the Crimson Throne, allow me to assure you that's not the case. I've killed one wizard and nearly TPK'd the party twice in their third level.
Okay, so
same level of complication.
So
same level of death.
I'm just asking. That's kind of, we haven't got to play this, so I don't want to.
Yeah. So
and that's
so
just
one
kind of a feel amongst us. We were even like, because we're like, the turning rule drove my undead loving buddy nuts. He bitched, and I'm like, let's try it.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people saw that, and they're like, and then they've tried it and found that it actually works pretty well. I actually think that the turning rule is one of the better changes that we've done. I mean, I think it addresses a lot of problems sort of at once. I think it addresses the 15-minute adventuring day problem. I think that it addresses the fact that it's just a pain in the ass to turn undead because everybody needs to open the book to figure out how it works. So, you know, I mean, that's part of the whole playtest, right? There's some stuff that looks wonky on first read-through, but when you play it, you're like, oh, it actually does work. And there might be some stuff that looks cool on first read-through that when you play it, you're like, that doesn't quite work the way that I thought. Yeah.
Well, one thing I found with the turn undead heal party effects is it stacks. You know, with turn undead, it was always all or nothing. Either they'll go, run away, or, oh, wow, that's neat. You've got a holy symbol. This way, if you're doing damage, hey, guess what? That turn damage you just did stacks the fighter poking him with a stick.
Well, and as it turns out, it also made turn undead completely worthless at higher levels because all the undead hit dice shot through the roof. And the cleric was like, I turn you and nothing happens, and I just put my holy symbol away, and then I cast flame strike because that's cool. But the turning now becomes more of a tactical choice. It becomes, I've got ogres in the middle of my party, and I'd love to use them my turn to heal, but if I do, I'm healing the ogres too. So, you know, I mean, we wanted to make it, a lot of what we're trying to do with the Pathfinder RPG is to add in kind of some new options, some new kind of life to some of the things that have become kind of ho-hum. You know, it's like putting out a whole new book of feats doesn't sound very interesting to me right now, but putting out a book of extra sorcerer bloodlines sounds pretty cool, right? And that's, the turning is another area where we now have more room to explore and new avenues to kind of check out, and that's certainly something we hope to do. And that and just dealing damage is fun.
So I want to take one more question, and then I'll show off the book if anybody has one more question. Does anyone want to just throw one up for charity's sake? No? Okay. Right. Well, thanks, guys. We really appreciate your interest and hope you check out the rules. They're free online, and I'd love to see you guys participate in the online playtest. And anyone who wants to take a look at a printer proof of the beta can come right up, and we'd be happy to show that off. I'll put that in front of you.
All right. Here, I'll hand you back the weapon.
Oh, good. And there's the Pathfinder RPG panel from Origins 2008. Now, a promo about a show for those of you interested in sticking with 3.5 and looking at the Pathfinder RPG. 3.5 Private Sanctuary is a show that is doing just that.
You enter a room. Immediately to your right, there is a computer, some recording equipment. In the back of the room, there is a very impressive shelf of Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 edition source books. What do you do?
I think I'd like to set up a website.
Roll for web design. You register the domain 35privatesanctuary.com. What kind of content would you like on your website?
I'd like some original content. I'd like some reviews of 3.5 edition material. I'd like a forum to talk about Dungeons & Dragons and other 3.5 related.
Don't forget that you've got the microphones on your right.
Oh, I'd like a podcast.
Roll for podcast. Critical hit. 3.5's Private Sanctuary is the online resource for Dungeons & Dragons gamers that will continue to play 3.5 edition of the rules. You can find us at www.35privatesanctuary.com.
Well, that's episode 77. And hey, why don't you email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com? And don't forget to swing by the forums and join in the conversation. There are some interesting conversations going on about how to tweak skills, which is something the Pathfinder guys struggled with. What would you do to make skills better? Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews and votes on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. Maybe swing by the podcastalley.com site and give the show a vote to let people know that you enjoyed the tome. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed in this show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And you can find all of these things at thetomeshow.com. And don't forget to swing by the partner shows of the Tome, Fistful of Comics and Games, where I have a bit of a running feud with Victor on the Monarchs comic briefing, because I am the pronunciation master of all things. And of course, don't forget to also check out Gamers Haven. They are still busy pumping up their Innies special. So if you want to know how to vote in the Innies, well, you're running out of time to do that, head over to CanadianCrusaders.com. Links for things mentioned this show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. And this has been episode 77, Pathfinder RPG panel at Origins 2008 of...
The Tome.